think that to be a good layman is very difficult enough. So in order to be a good monk, it might be harder or more difficult. What do you think about it?
Well, I feel that it's not right for me to become a monk yet. Mm-hmm. I also feel what you say, that it's just being a layman is an excellent place to practice the Dhamma, because depending on situations all the time which arise that enable one to try to develop mindfulness and right understanding.
Because in the old days, when a person listened to the teaching from Buddha, and he understood it quite well, he could understand himself very clearly whether he would like to follow the monk's life or layman's life.
Mm-hmm.
Because a layman can attain Sotapanna and Sakadagami and Anagami according to his own accumulation. So one knows oneself better when one has more understanding of the teachings.
Yeah.
Otherwise, people just want to enter the monkhood without understanding one's accumulation clearly enough. So if one has clear understanding of one's accumulation, then one knows better whether to be a monk or a layman.
What about the right conditions for developing the understanding of the Dhamma? I know from theory that one can be aware of nama and rupa in any conditions, but it would seem that there are some conditions that are more conducive than others.
The most important condition is discussion in order to have more understanding. Because study can be any place, here or in the forest, at the monastery, or on the train, anywhere. When there is understanding, that is study. The growth of the development of insight.
What about in terms of livelihood? For instance, I work in television, which is a great rat race to be in. And sometimes I'm directly involved in productions that I consider to be not terribly useful for people, and it's reaching such a wide audience. I've come to a crossroads where I wonder whether it's useful to continue in that sort of field, or whether it may be more useful for me to look somewhere else.
Life exists only in one moment. So this moment is so real because it's conditioned by accumulation. So no matter one works this kind of job or other kind, it's conditioned. Right understanding can see it as it is, as only a conditioned reality. And then the decision is conditioned as well. Each moment is conditioned. No matter you turn left or right, it's conditioned by one or other condition.
But the moment of doubt that she's talking about, of indecision as to whether to go on or change her job, how does that ever become resolved?
Right understanding can see it as it is when it arises and falls away. And then decision can arise again, and right understanding can see decision as only a moment of thinking. So one cannot try to change one's accumulation without understanding. But understanding itself will change it, whether she will continue on her job or change her job.
Yes.
But let right understanding does it.
So it would be the thing, if you don't feel you've got the right understanding, to wait until it arises. Mm-hmm. Is that the answer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I see what you mean.
But then supposing an opportunity. I mean, this interests me because in the Western world it's all sort of achievement and energy to get on, to make a living. And
even that reality is real, that right understanding can see that effort is effort, intention is intention, doubt is doubt, different realities
Yes.
appearing one at a time.
Yes.
So if one makes decision for changing one's job, it's a reality, conditioned reality as well.
So if an opportunity came that you were offered something else,
it would be by condition.
Mm-hmm. It would be by conditions and right understanding to make the choice. So the thing is just that's the way.
The problem is that we're so used to thinking that we can control the situation and we can make the decision that somehow there is a right decision that we must make, and
so very difficult.
Instead of just accepting the conditions.
That's one of the things, patience is.
Yes.
Is
all Buddhas praised patience so much, and one cannot understand what patience is if one does not develop right understanding, because it grows very slowly that one understands what patience is, because one cannot reach the highly developed insight immediately. Mm. But it grows very gradually from moment to moment. If there is no right understanding of reality at this moment, how can one expect to have the highly developed right understanding at once?
Yeah.
And when it grows, one knows that now it's right understanding, not self at all. And one knows how does it arise, what conditions it. If there is no hearing, no studying, no discussing, how can one understand more about reality which appears now?
We always want quick results.
Yes.
We always want to control and somehow think we can do something.
And one knows by
trying to force more understanding.
Yes. And only right understanding can see that it's motivated by desire, attachment. It always moves one away from this present moment.
Yes, one. But when does one realize when there should be some action? You see, most people just to sit and think about it or even discuss it. There's a time. Does that happen because of right accumulations that you know when to act?
Mm-hmm. Yes, but
to
there
take
is,
action.
But there is no body who is acting. One should have right understanding of reality as not self.
Yes.
If it's not self, then what is it? For example, this moment of seeing, it's not self.
Mm.
Why? Because it's a reality which has faculty of experiencing visible object.
Yes.
That's all. But it seems to be only intellectual understanding about seeing when we talk about a reality which has faculty of experiencing visible object. If there is no awareness, direct awareness. So awareness doesn't mean to be conscious only of visible object, but it means the development of understanding, beginning to know, to understand that this moment of seeing, as natural as it is, it's only a moment of a reality arising, experiencing visible object, and then falls a bit away. Because it's not the same reality which experiences sound. Mm.
Mm.
Different realities all the time, from moment to moment, by different conditions.
Mm. I think what you mean, which is, I'm going back to them, is how does one make decisions in life. I know that it's an accumulation, I know that there are conditions. But if one could take an example, if you could, for instance, you decided to come to Europe, to England. So you acted, I mean you made a decision.
When there is no awareness, one takes all realities for I. I make decision. I see, I hear,
yes,
I think.
Yes, yes, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said.
So
but the decision was made then.
Yes.
It was made.
It's only a conditioned reality, arises and falls away. At this moment, I do not make any decision to go or to come.
Yeah.
But there are conditions for seeing and hearing and thinking and saying and feeling all the time.
Yeah, so if somebody says, do you want to Do you can say yes or
when there is no awareness,
yes.
I take all realities for I.
Yes.
But at moment of being aware, right understanding, can see reality as it is, not as I anymore. Only at that moment. So only a moment of awareness is better than none.
Yes.
Because reality is
something just went through.
Reality is.
I was just thinking that. I mean, it's very obvious, and I've probably thought about this before, but that I suppose decisions should be based on, as you say, right understanding rather than being motivated by attachment or by aversion.
Or ambition, or.
Yes, because for instance, I could leave television because of my aversion to some of the things that are happening there. I could stay also because of my attachment to some of the things that are happening there, but whatever decision I make has to be really with the right understanding, as you say.
When it's not time to make decision is not made yet. So it's another reality at that moment. When there is not time for doubt, doubt does not arise, it does not appear, but other reality is conditioned. Any reality can be object of right understanding. So we don't have to wait for decision.
It just happens. You just go on doing. You just go on doing your work and getting the right understanding, and then a decision will be made.
And there will be conditions for the right decision. Is this what you're saying? That if I continue to develop understanding, that whatever decision we make in life, it's a conditioned decision, if you like.
Of the right understanding. It's a result of the right understanding.
This moment is not moment of making decision yet. Is that right? Because there is no conditions for making decision. But there are other conditions for seeing, hearing, feeling, thinking. So one can see that life goes on from moment to moment. Life at moment of seeing is the kind of life. It's the world of sight, world of seeing. No other world insert in that moment. No hearing can insert in moment of seeing. At moment of hearing, it's another world, other moment, another life. It's the moment of hearing, and seeing cannot insert in moment of hearing at all. So
intentions, because we constantly think of an I, and we think that we have to make these decisions.
But it's only thinking. So one can see that thinking arises most of the time after seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching.
Yes.
It conditions thinking of what is seen, what is heard.
Yes.
All the time.
So it can result in right thinking or wrong thinking.
Yes, depending on one's accumulation.
Ah, I see. Now, so you see that can affect, to have the right thinking, I suppose, everything.
It accumulates more right thinking.
Yes.
A moment of right understanding now will accumulate another moment of right And what's really going to help isn't the whether we do something or not do something, it's the awareness of the seeing and the hearing and all the other realities which are appearing at this moment.
Yes.
So it seems that we have to do something special, we have to stay in television or leave it, but what we do depends on different conditions at different moments. But what's really going to help our life, and not so much whether we stay in or stay out of television, so much as being aware of the seeing right at this moment, thinking about the television right now, the hearing now.
Yes. It would be wonderful to get to that point, wouldn't it? So that one wouldn't keep on saying, I better not do this, or I must do the other I. It's the I that, as you say, and yet you can't, it's very difficult to get away from yourself.
But then, you know, again, conditions change, like even just considering in the right way now for a moment, discussing the right thing now, listening for a moment now to even beginning to understand a little bit, even theoretically, that what is important now is the awareness of the seeing smell, even that in itself can be a helpful condition.
Yes,
but it's again the patience and understanding can only develop so gradually, so slowly. Mm.
Has it affected your life?
Yes, I mean, I find that...
It's easier to make your...
I find that the more that makes sense of the Dharma, the more I realise just how little understanding there really is, just how much ignorance there is all the time, how little I really know about what is happening now, and how much we do just live in a world of concepts and ideas and speculations. But I think that if one doesn't begin to realise how little we really understand about the present moment right now, we're never going to consider, we're never going to develop more awareness. So I think that just that considering in the right way, seeing the importance, the urgency for developing awareness is very helpful in itself.
Mm.
And of course there's the understanding of how to develop awareness, which is very subtle.
It has to be developed as well.
Is that the same as mindfulness, awareness?
Yes, but
right.
If we use the term mindfulness, it depends on each individual's understanding what mindfulness is.
Mm.
Because it's quite different from what we used to understand it in the worldly meaning, because it has to go with right understanding, the development of right understanding. When we talk about mindfulness in Buddhism, it must be wholesome, healthy reality. Mm. When one has attachment, one cannot say that one is mindful at the moment of being attached. But there can be awareness or mindfulness of attachment. It means that mindfulness cannot arise together with attachment.
One has to know what can be the object of mindfulness, so one has to know more about realities, because otherwise my mother would say she's mindful when she's in the kitchen all the time, she's cooking the lunch. But the more one finds out about realities, the more one realises that what one took for so long for being mindfulness maybe isn't mindfulness at all in Buddhist
term. But when you practice mindful, walking meditation, because I don't know a lot about this and I'm trying to learn, you are mindful of your walking, aren't you? So you're thinking.
This is like what Sarah just said a moment ago, because it seems like one thinks that one is mindful, but in reality it's not the reality of mindfulness at all.
So walking meditation isn't mindfulness?
I don't think so, because it's motivated by desire for walking. One is sitting at this moment. Why should one walk? Can right understanding see reality at this moment while one is sitting, naturally? When it's right understanding, it can. So why does one have to get up and walk in order to be mindful?
I thought that was an exercise to keep your mind at one point, because lots of people's minds flitter about.
So if that is the aim, the result is only concentration, having one-pointedness. That is not the development of right understanding of reality which appears now while one does not walk yet.
Oh, I see. So it's,
So desire moves one away from this present moment. It keeps on motivating one to do something.
Mm.
Not now, not being aware now.
Yes, I understand that now. That's quite difficult, isn't it?
And also when one talks about walking or cooking in the kitchen, the many moments, many different realities. Walking is a concept we have. There are realities of the different moments of seeing and feeling and harness. Mm. So there can be a moment of awareness and then many moments of no awareness, of so many different realities while one's walking. But we talk about walking and really think that's a reality.
Mm-hmm.
So in fact, it's just an idea we have.
I was thinking about walking meditation when you're supposed to just think of that as as you rightly say, concentration. So you could equally well have mindfulness sitting
and
still.
And the object of walking meditation is not clear.
No.
It's only thinking about walking.
That's right. Yes.
So it's not the studying of the reality which appears at that moment, one by one.
No, it's keeping the mind concentrated on walking.
On what?
Walking.
What is walking then?
Putting one foot in front of the other. That's what you're supposed to... I'm just thinking about this mindfulness and concentration. I can't...
I think it comes back to what we were saying a moment ago about mindfulness. We think that... I used to think that I could be mindful in so many situations, and I thought I had a lot of mindfulness. And then I started to find out a little more about what are realities, what can really be experienced right now from moment to moment. And I found out that most of the things that I was being mindful of weren't real at all. So when you talk about walking, what is walking? It's we have an idea of walking. We think about walking, but in fact there are many different realities, many different moments while one is walking, many different things appearing through different sense doors, many different thoughts. So one has to know more about the different realities and be a little more precise, I think, to find out what one can really be mindful of.
And even if one says that whilst one is walking that one can be aware of whatever appears through the sense doors, one still has to understand that there are no special conditions for awareness to arise other than the right understanding. The right understanding doesn't necessarily arise because we're walking or sitting or doing anything in particular, but because we have the right understanding.
Yes. Yes, that I can see. I brought up the other thing because it really is a question of concentration, I'm sure, not mindfulness or awareness. It's just concentrating on doing one thing at a time, which is a different thing altogether.
So when people talk about meditation, usually they mean concentration.
Yes.
Not mindfulness. But the Eightfold Path comprises right awareness and right concentration.
Yes.
So there are different realities.
Yes.
But people just concentrate on concentration only. So what they are practicing is developing concentration and without any knowledge of right awareness.
Yes.
Yes, I was going to ask you that, take for instance meditation on metta. I've heard you say over and over again that we have to get to know the characteristic of metta in daily life first before we can recognize what metta is. But even if we begin to know the characteristic of metta, how can we be sure that because we have the intention of developing metta through meditation, that metta is going to arise if life is anatta, this would mean simply that metta may arise or it may not arise.
Yes.
So when one sits with the intention of meditating on metta,
we should come to the first question of why does one want to develop metta? There must be a reason for all levels of understanding. If it's not reasonable, then it cannot lead to any understanding. So why does one want to develop metta? The people in the old days understood the subtlety of unwholesomeness, that they knew that whenever there's no moment of wholesomeness, it must be moment of unwholesomeness. That's why they developed all kinds of wholesomeness. The person who developed metta also developed dana and sila and satipatthana and samatha. Satipatthana is the development of insight, and samatha is the development of calmness. Because in the day, one knows that generosity is so good, it's so wholesome, but there is not always opportunity for dana or generosity. Sometimes it's time for dana, and sometimes it's for sila. But what about moments when there is no dana and sila? The consciousness, the citta, always unwholesome. So those who are so wise, who know themselves clearly about unwholesome moment and wholesome moment, develop metta as well. So one has to see this moment, whether it's wholesome or unwholesome, in order to develop more wholesomeness. But citta, or consciousness, arises and falls away so fast. When there is no mindfulness, how can it know whether this moment is wholesome or unwholesome? Right understanding must be very precise. It can see unwholesomeness as unwholesomeness, and wholesomeness as wholesomeness. Even citta arises and falls away so fast. So in the old days, people developed samatha when they didn't know the Eightfold Path yet, because it's not taught yet by the Buddha. But after they had listened to the teachings and they knew about the Eightfold Path, they also developed the Eightfold Path. And people today who understand moment of unwholesomeness and wholesomeness also developed all types of wholesomeness: dana, generosity, sila, morality, samatha, tranquility, and satipatthana, because they know that they cannot control their citta to be always generous or having morality all the time. So they develop satipatthana, and it helps them to have moments of samatha as well, by conditions, not by their will.
So should the only reason why one should want to develop metta be because one realizes that it's
how much akusala one has accumulated, and one cannot force satipatthana arising anytime at will. So one knows that dana is not enough, sila is not enough. All kinds of kusala should be developed.
Well, what about if one's concerned with helping other people, and one realizes that when one's angry to people that doesn't help, but when one has metta, that is what helps.
Yes.
And that is, so it's not just realizing that what's important is the wholesome citta, but also that's what can also.
Yes. Samatha or calmness cannot be separated from wholesome moment. So one knows that at moment of giving things away, it is so calm from having attachment, aversion, and ignorance. At moment of performing sila, observing sila, and one is wise enough, right understanding can see calmness there at that moment. That is calm. It's delivered from attachment, aversion, and ignorance. So one can see calmness at moment of kusala. That's why one can develop calmness by way of recollecting of one's generosity at moment of giving, that it's calm.
What is actually happening then when people are sitting and meditating, whatever their object of meditation is, whether it be breath, whatever it is, if they can't force a tranquil citta to arise, then they would have to have the right understanding of how to develop tranquility, wouldn't they, to be able to.
If there is no understanding at all, then it will lead to strange happening only. That's why many people say that they lost their consciousness, And sometimes they feel that they are floating. But that is not real. It's not any kind of right understanding at all. Because actually at that moment they are sitting. But they do not have any understanding of anything in and around themselves.
So you don't agree with the fact that some people, when they meditate, say they drift off into nothing?
They are sitting.
They're just sitting.
Yes, and they think.
A blank mind.
It's only strange happening, conditioned by ignorance.
Oh, I see, yes, yes.
No right understanding from the very beginning. How can they have more and more right understanding at the end? Right understanding is conditioned from moment to moment. It grows. So the development of samatha, tranquility, and the development of vipassana, insight meditation, must be started or begun with right understanding from the very beginning.
The Buddha taught the importance of right understanding and developing right understanding. But his own path for obtaining enlightenment seems to have gone in several different directions. The first couple of years, I understand, he studied under, he practiced concentration and developing of the supernatural powers, and he practiced asceticism. And then in the end, he was able to attain enlightenment. Now, after he attained enlightenment, it seems as though then he had the complete right understanding of all reality. So wouldn't you say that in the Buddha's case, his right understanding was completed, or yes, completed after having attained enlightenment, and then he taught that right understanding was so important? Or do you feel that he had it even before, that he actually used right understanding from the beginning?
We shouldn't think about this his one life only, because he had accumulated lots of virtues enough to be Buddha. So long, long time ago, not only in this last life. What about his previous accumulation in previous lives? And when we talk about right understanding, we should remember that there are many levels of right understanding. The intellectual understanding is the level of understanding. The developed right understanding is another level, and there are many stages of developed right understanding, the direct right understanding of reality which appears.
I think what Chip is asking, correct me if I'm wrong, is whether enlightenment can happen without right understanding being fully developed gradually.
It's developed gradually from life to life.
But it right understanding has to be developed to realize enlightenment.
If there is no satipatthana developed, he couldn't become enlightened at all. Because the first moment of being aware of a reality is not the moment of becoming an arahata.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't just happen out of the blue without understanding being fully developed, is that right?
Mm-hmm. The first watch, he had recollected his previous life through samatha practice. And the second watch, he recollected the arising and falling away, birth and death of different existence. And the third watch, which comprised 4 hours, he finally attained Buddhahood at the same time of dawn when the sun rose. So it's not the first moment of being aware.
But he was practicing samatha.
Yes.
So that, I mean, it isn't bad then to practice samatha if one say has the simulation for it, and couldn't it be?
Yes, but when one has more understanding of samatha, one can see how difficult it is to develop samatha. Because in the Buddha's time, there were few monks who had attained arahatship with the accomplishment of samatha practice, of jhanas. And even today, we can see that we can develop satipatthana, but who can have both accomplishment of insight and samatha?
You don't think they would go together?
If we talk about samatha in the sense that it's calm, it's calmness, then at moment of being wholesome, it's calm.
I wasn't meaning that sense. I meant in the practice of a sort of formal practice of samatha for concentration, so that when one's mind is extremely concentrated, that one can then apply right mindfulness much more skillfully.
What do you think about moment of right understanding, whether there is calmness or not? At moment of having right understanding, there must be calmness. And when right understanding grows, calmness also grows. And it's calmness which accompanied by right understanding. So it's much better than calmness without right understanding of reality which appears. What kind of calmness is better? The one with right understanding of reality which appears, or the one without right understanding?
I would think the one that developed both side by side.
When there is right understanding with right awareness, there is calmness as well. Mm-hmm. So one does not have to develop calmness with extra calmness. Because there is calmness at moment of having right understanding.
Is there concentration?
Concentration is one-pointedness.
Yeah.
So at this moment, there is one-pointedness all the time. When there is seeing, there is one-pointedness of visible object, because there is no sound appear at moment of seeing. And when there is hearing, there is one-pointedness of sound only. That sound, only sound appears. Visible object cannot appear at that moment of hearing. So, actually, one-pointedness is a reality. It's a mental factor accompanies each moment of consciousness. So we do not have to think or to be attached to it. It arises by conditions. And concentration will appear clearly when there is right awareness and right understanding developed. One understands better about concentration, the characteristic of concentration.
That is the concentration of the Eightfold Path.
Yes.
That's the only time when it arises.
Because concentration arises with each moment, that it arises with lobha, attachment as well, or dosa, aversion as well. But there must be ignorance with one-pointedness, with lobha, attachment. It cannot see reality as it is, even its one-pointedness. When one is doing something that one likes so much at that moment, one enjoys it. So it's a kind of attachment accompanied by one-pointedness and ignorance. So that type of one-pointedness cannot see reality as it is. It's useless.
So there can be, one can develop a lot of concentration in some situation, and there can be, it can all be a kusala, it can be all motivated, it can all be accompanied by lobha, by desire, wanting to start.
I appreciate all that you say, but I just am also aware that the Buddha did practice concentration meditation very intensely under Hindu masters for 2 years and attained all of the jhanas and all of the realization, or all of the perfection.
Because
that. And then at the end, the night he attained enlightenment, he was once again practicing samatha.
People in the Buddha's time did not have wrong understanding about tranquil meditation or calmness, but people today misunderstand calmness and
tranquility.
Yes.
So he was practicing under his master a proper
right
concentration.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he could not attain jhana at all. But people today misunderstood their concentration for jhana. They said that now they had attained first or second or third jhana, but in reality it's not.
So if somebody actually does attain the jhana in their meditation practice, they are in fact practicing right concentration.
At level of tranquil meditation only.
Yes, that I understand.
If they do not practice satipatthana, they cannot attain sotapanna. It's only tranquility without right understanding of reality which appears.
And there are also special conditions for developing samatha at the level of jhana citta too.
It has to begin with right understanding from the very beginning. Yes. It says that for dana, generosity, and sila, morality, it can be done without right understanding. But for the development of tranquility and insight, it's impossible to develop without right understanding.
It seems, when I ask, it's probably a naive question, but the most important thing is right understanding.
Certainly.
And if someone who knew very little about Buddhist practice came to you and said, how do you achieve, set about, begin to have right understanding, what would you tell them?
There are many levels of right understanding. Right understanding of wholesomeness as wholesomeness and unwholesomeness as unwholesomeness. This is very important, because if one takes unwholesomeness for wholesomeness, that is not right. So one has to
start with the simple things
and
get them right at the beginning.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you start with wholesomeness and unwholesomeness.
It seems
Kuzla and Akula.
It seems to me that one starts with taking so much for being wholesome which isn't wholesome, and just that gradually one...
You make mistakes to begin with, I should think.
So many of the things that we take for wholesome just aren't at all, and so it's like having a healthy shock over and over again, realising that so much that one takes in life for being good and helpful is just motivated by desire or by ignorance.
Yes, but even the desire for right understanding is a desire, and one could become very attached.
Different moment.
So,
desire is one moment.
Yes.
Right understanding is another moment.
Another moment, yes.
But one can have desire for right understanding.
That's what I was thinking.
But,
ambition to achieve.
You want so much to have right understanding.
Yes, that's it.
Try so hard to have it, and again, it's just desire.
Yes, or anything about the study. Sometimes you think, this I will really understand this evening and study.
There can be one moment, there can be the desire, wanting so much to have some understanding.
Mm.
And the next moment, there can be the understanding that the wanting doesn't get any understanding, but one can have some consideration about the helpfulness of right understanding.
Sometimes,
different moments.
Yes, I realize. I know sometimes the wanting or the desire will fade away, and the understanding perhaps just comes by alone without any.
I think that, and often we think that what is something makes sense, and we think that what has helped us is the wanting to understand. But in fact, it's not the wanting, the craving that has helped, but the moments of understanding in between.
Yes.
Because there's so little awareness.
Yes, that's right. The little tiny, tiny bits like chinks of light in between that just come through.
Mm. But because there's so few of those little chinks of light, we really confuse the different realities, and we think that it's the wanting for results that's helped, and the doing something special, and the trying to control, but in fact it's not those moments, it's the little bits of understanding.
And sometimes we think if we can repeat a certain thing again, that we can have the level of understanding perhaps that we had the day before or the night before, and in fact it just doesn't work that way.
No, but I think one should have guidance perhaps. or help to...
To have the intellectual level of understanding so you can begin to study the characteristics of mind.
Yes, so that eventually it'll just come by itself without any attachment.
It's quite a different thing from actually beginning the practice of being aware, because we will accumulate so much wrong understanding through many lives that in fact the levels of awareness that we have at any level at all during the day are very few and far between. It's quite a shock to realise that there's usually far more unwholesomeness than there is wholesomeness.
I'm sure,
But I'd like to talk about this meditation further. I understand what you're saying, at least intellectually. But, you know, in the West at the moment, there are so many people going through so many problems. Our whole pace of life is very fast, very quick, and I think it's going to get worse. I don't think it's going to get better. And I know so many of my friends, when they're going through problems, who perhaps don't necessarily know anything about meditation or developing tranquility or even know anything about the Dharma, quite often say to me, well, we know that there's something in your life that helps you. We know you have Dharma friends around and you have discussions and so on. What is it that we can do that can help us? And quite often I'm terribly tempted to say, meditate, because there are so many people who practice meditation who, whether or not they have right or wrong understanding of meditation, I don't know, seem to become more tranquil and seem to become less agitated and less restless and in fact have better health. And although I know that ultimately they must have right understanding, it seems to me at times to be something that perhaps we could suggest to people. For instance, if I was saying to Sarah yesterday, if someone's hungry, immediately you give them a meal. If someone has no money, you give them some money, the problem is immediate. And so there's an immediate panacea, there's an immediate thing that you can do. If someone's coming to you and asking for help, there may be something that you can offer through advice, through your level of right understanding. But I also sometimes, as I said, feel very tempted to say, start meditating.
But they don't understand what meditation is. But if you help them to understand reality at that moment, like attachment, aversion, or generosity, and what is right and what is wrong, all realities are only Dhamma. But we don't have to say that this is akusala citta and that is kusala citta. We don't have to use those terms at all, but we can apply Dhamma in our answer, in our action, in our speech as well.
Yes, I understand your question. I think you asked.
I understand. Because people choose answer too. But,
yes, but it, if you say that to them, if you say, well, you must think about the aversion and generosity and
we can
right thinking. I don't think they grasp it.
No. They have to be very careful the way.
Yes, they think perhaps it's something up in the clouds, and they're just ordinary
one
people.
Applies it to their life.
And if you said to them, "I'll take 3 steps forward and 3 steps backwards," they would understand immediately. They want quick answer.
Yes, you can answer in the way that you think that is the best way, but it's Dharma. What you said is Dharma, and you are applying Dharma, but you use different terms.
Sometimes it's so much people come and they want to be told to do something because we're so used to always
even
doing
so,
things.
That is Dharma.
Of course, we're orientated to activity.
And sometimes, you know, someone would much prefer to be told to go and take 3 steps than to be told to consider what it is that is happening right now, because it sounds so mundane or so boring to discuss about seeing an invisible object, or to people don't want to face up to their anger or their attachments. So we spend a whole time trying to get round it and
exactly. Do something else. And it seems a pity to miss the opportunity, because as you rightly say, the world's in a sort of state. There's every social welfare, no spiritual welfare. I mean, we're on the social welfare sort of state. And people want other help than material. It isn't just a question always of saying, well, here's something to help you over the next day. They really want inspiration or something to guide them. And a lot of people are lost. And if they come to you and ask, one should have some sort of... And I don't know what the answer is, because if you say, well, come one evening and talk to me for 2 or 3 hours, they probably won't, because they haven't got the 2 or 3 hours.
There's also many motivations, too, for helping people. I think you can perhaps help people through attachment to those.
Yes.
There's people in many different moments. Some moments of compassion, some moments.
Yes, and also one shouldn't help because you think you're such a clever helper or
something. The more understanding one has of oneself and of those different motives and the moments of good and bad,
yes,
of what's happening now, the more one is going to be motivated,
yes,
more for wholesome reasons,
yes,
and is going to be really concerned about helping that person as opposed to just,
yes,
having a good name or...
Yes, but I'm sure Kunsujin would, if someone came to her, I'm sure that she would be able to convey, which I wish we could, something in the moment of looking and speaking and saying something that would help people.
Mm.
And I don't know what it is, but I would like
yes.
it defined. Do you know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes, I do. I find this understanding helps me. But I find it so completely frustrating at times to think that I perhaps don't have the skill necessary to be able to convey it through to people who need my help.
It's through your kindness that you that condition you to answer them properly at that moment with kindness.
But you probably do feel very kindly towards them, do you?
And also
yes,
the confidence in what is most helpful in life,
yes,
what is right in life, because the more one has confidence that what is most helpful is developing more understanding and speaking of metta and all these things that we've been discussing, the more it is going to be conveyed. If one has a lot of doubt or wondering about what is the right practice oneself, that will be conveyed. So
still, if,
yes,
even if one doesn't have any doubt about the right practice and one has confidence, I think that there are still many levels of understanding that the people have, but I think it's reasonable to realise that not everyone necessarily has the accumulations to understand the development of vipassana, whereas someone might have the accumulation to understand how to be kind or to develop metta or develop sila. Perhaps they may not necessarily have the accumulation of developing vipassana. Quite often it's helpful to know the accumulations or some of the accumulations of those people, so you know what's the most useful thing to say perhaps at that particular,
yes,
time.
But that must come from right understanding, I suppose. That as soon as you see a person, perhaps you feel some love and understanding of them, and they probably feel that back.
And know the better whether to just encourage their kindness or to talk about
something,
like,
yes.
What is it? I often wondered if developing samatha is so skilled and developed and needs a level of understanding, needs a level of understanding of developing true tranquility. There's so many meditation groups in the West at the moment. People appear to be more tranquil.
How do you know that? Consciousness. Because if one is sitting, who knows whether one's citta is kusala or akusala, because one does not act, one does not speak.
But people can think that people can say they're more tranquil, or think they're more tranquil,
mm-hmm,
then who knows again.
In the TM movement in the West, it's been possible through their particular kinds of meditation to, for many people to practice the supernatural powers, such as flying and invisibility and a great list of additional powers. Now, I understand from reading in Buddhist texts that these powers can only be developed, in fact, if one has attained jhana, and that they are an outgrowth of something that is attained at this level. Now, if these people in this movement are actually successful with practicing the supernatural powers, it must mean that they are attaining jhana.
Have you seen their supernatural power?
Well, not personally, but we both have friends who practice.
Yes, them. We haven't seen them, but we have friends whom we quite like.
Would you like to see? Can you ask them to perform supernatural power?
You have to go to the place, and it's quite expensive.
Do you know about the device?
No, yes, because he was Buddhist, yes. Yes, I know, which seems terrible, because I don't believe in any intolerance or anything. I mean, that seems wrong, but I suppose it's an organization. So, but we haven't seen it, no. But we're told, and it's been reported. So, anyway, that's Chip's
question.
We've
seen a lot of pictures.
What is the use of seeing superpower?
Well, I'm not concerned about, you know, about the superpower, and maybe I'm less attached to the idea of actually becoming somebody who practices that, but I just wonder whether, if that is in fact true, then it must be right concentration.
And, excuse me, what is the motive of performing supernatural power?
The motive is purification.
Is that the motive?
Yes.
Not for excitement?
No. Excitement apparently often accompanies
and a lot of publicity.
But the purpose is to accelerate the process of purification. This is at least the teaching within the movement, and this is the understanding everybody who practices.
Do you mean that those who can fly have eradicated the...
No, it's just that they're able to eradicate it more rapidly than through the usual samatha practice.
Samatha can't eradicate anyway. Samatha just suppresses things like restlessness and so on.
It
releases it often, I think. Are you talking about meditation?
The impurities are usually referred to as stress.